The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Another Sunday morning on We the People Radio. You're here with Aaron Ryan and Elizabeth Woodward and Bob Martin, who is our sound engineer and handles our music. It is Sunday. We are ready to go. Welcome back.
And our gopher's home sleeping.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we're at KCNR.
We got to get our own coffee today?
Yes, we have to get our own coffee. There is no one to message to go play with the heating and cooling system.
So everything better go perfect.
We're alone.
So you're joining in on KCNR 1460, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media. If you want to give us a call, the number is 530-605-4567. We're chatting and streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. I highly encourage you to go to that webpage and follow along today with our guest. You can find out everything about today's speaker as well as all of our archived past shows. So join in, jump in, get ready, let's go.
I would definitely go to that page because there's a ton of information about Beverly Ekman on there. And there's a nice picture, too, so you kind of have an idea of who we're listening to. She has a biography. I wouldn't even try to read the whole thing. It goes on and on and on.
That could take the whole 2 hours.
I know. It's awesome. And so just some of the highlights. She was an educator for 9 years, so she does have experience with the school. She lasted longer than I did in the English department in the school where she was, apparently. I fled fairly early. She wrote English grammar curriculum for foreign students. She has a BS in English from Texas Tech. Graduate work was University of California, Irvine, and University of Houston. Then...
Go Anteaters. That's the UC Irvine mascot, the Anteaters.
Really?
Really.
Well, it's as good as any.
Okay, Bob's already won the trivia award. It's like 8:07.
You're on your game today, Bob.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Caffeinated.
We all just rolled in. It's like, Bob's got to jump on us. Bev was also the science and technical writer and editor of NASA's official newspaper, which is pretty fun. The biggest feature was David the Bubble Baby, and behind the scenes look at space technology and medicine. And that actually was turned into that movie. Remember with John Travolta?
Oh yeah,
yeah. The
Oh yeah.
Remember
we're not talking Saturday Night Fever.
No, the other one, the Bubble Guy.
Yeah,
yeah. So I was reading that last night. I'd forgotten. I read that a couple months ago when I asked her to come on the program. Mm-hmm. She also was the chief speechwriter. This was, I think, the coolest part for Chief Justice Warren Burger. She's done tons of speech writing.
And her reason for joining us today is because we've been hitting the public meetings on our local level pretty heavy, and mm-hmm. because they already have their game plan figured out, we're going to learn how to walk into a public meeting and not be manipulated.
Exactly. I don't even know. I think it was because I found her book, How to Counter Group Manipulation Tactics, and I was like... They're definitely tactics, and they're definitely group manipulation, and we have been doing a lot of reading about the Delphi technique, mm-hmm. and that's just a piece of the puzzle, as it turns out.
And as novices, we've been trying to apply the Delphi technique, some better than others.
Some meetings have gone better than others, yes. And the subtitle on the book is The Techniques of Unethical Consensus Building, Unmasked. And it really is unethical. And anybody who winds up in one of those meetings and suddenly feels like they've been teleported back to second grade, with actually less power than you had in second grade, mm-hmm. realizes that there's something funky going on.
They tell you they want your input, but they've already got a predetermined conclusion.
Correct. So, all right, with that lengthy introduction, Beverly, are you in there?
Yes, I am. I'm listening.
Good morning. You're like, wow.
Hello, how are you?
You didn't know you did all that. You're like the Army, huh? You did all that before breakfast?
Yeah, sometimes I send it all and say, hey, take what you want.
Well, that was pretty cool. I like, wow, she wrote for NASA. I didn't know anybody who did that. And then, you know, speechwriter for, I was kind of curious about that. Do they do a lot of speeches, I guess, the Chief Justices?
Well, the Chief Justice, Warren Burger, stepped down from the court. I think he was about to retire, and they tapped him for this job of chairman of the Bicentennial Commission on the U.S. Constitution because some conservatives especially felt that the kids were not learning the Constitution in school, and of course they weren't. So actually I became speechwriter for him. I had to beat out some 200 other people, as it turned out. I didn't know that at the time. I found that out many years later from the personnel director that I had beat these people out for the job. And so that's how that got started. And, of course, it led to a lot more contacts and so on. And I got an awful lot of experience and a lot of learning about the Constitution. So that kind of started me in many, many directions.
Well, because after that, for like 13 years, it looks like, you were the writer for the U.S. Department of Justice.
Yes, I wrote for various departments. Sometimes it was manuals, oddly legal manuals, and writing up findings for the lawyers as if they couldn't do that. Anyway, that one alone. But and other times it was speeches or just letters that came in from various people complaining about whatever. You know, sometimes it was from prisoners complaining about their situation, or as usual, I'm innocent here, you know, and that kind of a thing. And of course, if it was a civil rights type thing, meaning racial discrimination or sexual discrimination, they would take it on. And if it wasn't, then they didn't really care about the letter at all. And that kind of soured me on the whole experience there, because at that point, you know, by the time I took on that last little thing that I was, no wonder I was detailed to it. Nobody else wanted to do it, or nobody else would do it. I didn't even know what it entailed until. So when I started getting letters like that and responding to those and realizing what the deal was, then I said, you know, I think I've had enough of this. And so I decided at that point I wanted to write full time, because at that point I was speaking and trying to fit it in on my off days and, you know, on my personal days and weekends, and also writing columns. I was a bona fide columnist at that point. So really I just decided that one of them had to go, and I was going to go on my own.
Can you imagine being the writer for the Justice Department now?
No, I left that one behind. I just, you know, officially retired at
defending
that point.
Defending the indefensible.
At that point, so there was really no reason not to.
Yeah, but like Bob said, defending the indefensible. You'd have to have a fairly loose set of standards to be able to pull that
and
off.
A steel stomach.
God. So, you know, it was funny. You had sent us a great...
Nine pages.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, by the way.
We asked people, hey, send us some information about what you'd like to talk about. Not that we need to be experts or anything. And all of a sudden, you know.
Wham, I gave you all this stuff.
Exactly, which was really kind of fun. And
great.
I'm like, oh, we're going to have her on like all month. Yeah, because it starts with... a lot of the things with school, and I thought, oh boy, if we start with school, we'll never get to public meetings. So your option, we can start with school and go to public meetings, but we for sure have to talk about public meetings. So whichever way leads in, it's interesting because all your information on the school system and how that is all set up to pretty much make us docile participants in group manipulation, it's interesting. It does flow that way. It does start with school. How about this? Bob, where are we? It's almost 8:15. Should we take a swift break and then we'll have a longer chunk to get into this?
We can do that.
All right, Beverly, you've got 2 minutes to reconnoiter, and we'll come back wherever you want to go.
All right, that sounds fine to me. And can we turn the volume up just a little bit at your end?
I don't know.
We'll work on it.
Not my job. we'll be back in 2 minutes at KCNR here at the home of Free Fire Media.
Yeah.
have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Welcome back. We are here with Beverly Ekman, author of Group
Ekman,
I'm so sorry. And she's the author of How to Counter Group Manipulation Tactics.
And Bob's got Group Manipulation Tactics music lined up for us all day, apparently.
Indeed.
That's fun.
So, Beverly, where do you want to start?
Oh, my goodness. It's hard to know with everything going on, election-wise and otherwise. Really, I think it's pretty important that we start with the manipulation, as you were talking about before, because people don't realize how deep that goes and how they are really being had psychologically, and how a psychological environment is created when they're going to these town hall meetings and focus groups, committee meetings. They're getting whopped, and of course I get a call a lot of times where they're saying they're getting whopped, and they don't understand how that happens. They don't understand how to shut the process down, and it is a process. So that's kind of why I think it's important that we go ahead and start with just exactly what you were talking about, the group manipulation, and I've written very extensively on it. But and I think this coming election is going to be the make or break for America, really. I don't think we're going to be able to turn the country around enough if we don't get I call it CCTP. It's not conservatives, it's not just Christians, it's traditionalists, it's constitutionalists, people who have the values and the ideals that support what they want to see the government doing. It's not just the concept of big government versus small government, although that's certainly there. It's not just the problem that our religious values are being trashed or health care is being nationalized along with anything else that can be nationalized. Those are the games that are being played, but that's not the main issue. The main issue is that we are having a psychological environment created for us by the media where it's it's a we mentality that they try to create. In other words, we don't want our children all to be AIDS statistics now, do we? So when you hear an opening line like that, that's one of your giveaways, that you are about to be put into this psychological environment, this we environment, that demands your attention, but which really is foreign to your experience. Because you may have taught your son and daughter right from wrong. You may have taught them about sex when you thought they were ready to hear about it. And you may have taught them all of these, the moral aspects of that as you see it. But suddenly you're being put into a situation of an inner city parent, perhaps, which may be foreign to your experience. But nevertheless, you're going to be dumped in there as if you had never taught your child anything. And so those are the kind of things that are being done to us. And we think of this person that's leading this conversation or meeting or focus group or whatever it is as a moderator, just the moderator of a discussion. But they're not. They're highly trained provocateurs or agitators that really know how to play a group.
Now, what's the difference between, and one of the questions that you sent us is, what is the difference between a change agent, a moderator, a facilitator, an agitator, and a provocateur?
Okay. A moderator is simply what it says it is. They try to move the discussion along so that you don't get bogged down on one topic and that people can actually move. But when you get into a professional agitator, that's something else again. They are highly trained to pit one faction against another. And to push a particular agenda. In other words, the thing that you came in to talk about in your focus group or whatever it is, task force, may have been advertised one way, say, a new format for report cards. But it's actually something else. It turns out to be pass-fail type grades, or no, building self-esteem through not giving grades at all. And you're not prepared for that. And it takes a pretty good professional agitator or provocateur to do that. Now, a facilitator is simply, they're kind of, if you will, a lower grade agitator or provocateur. And so they facilitate a meeting kind of like a moderator does, but they too have an agenda. And it's whoever paid them to come in. So it, the first thing you do whenever you go on to one of these meetings, whether it is a focus group, a task force, a curriculum committee, I don't care what it is, even a church thing. I've seen it done in churches, too. Boy, have I seen it done in churches, especially big churches that are, you know, breakaways, about to break away because they don't like the liberalist theology that has suddenly emerged. Well, they bring in somebody from the outside, but nobody stops to ask. The parishioners or the people in the focus group in the school, the parents, they don't stop to ask, who is paid to come in and be our facilitator? Who is paid to be the moderator? That's all you need to ask, and you ask it a little better than that because that's too transparent the way I just said it. You'd say, oh, by the way, I'm so excited about this meeting that we're going to be going to, and I just wondered who the moderator is going to be, who chose them.
And then just basically follow the trail.
Yeah, and then you do your own research. But at this point, we're so far behind, if you excuse the term, behind the eight ball. I mean, we really are. It's like we're being punched around with a pool cue. And we are so far behind, and we are just not prepared for the level of deception and programming and conditioning that is going on here. We do not think that people who live in America in particular are going to do this to their own people, but we're wrong. That was the whole point, really, of the volatile 60s, was to get radicalized students to buy into this type of thing and this type of morality, if you want to call it that. And they didn't see anything wrong with it, so naturally we're full of scandals and everything that nobody ever heard of or would have believed in our great-grandparents' day, or even our grandparents' day. So we don't believe we are being controlled and set up like this. So now we have to backtrack, and we have to become familiar with what the professionals are doing. There's lots of books out there, of course, and I've written my own, but there I got a lot of it studying the really old documents. I mean, from the Soviet Union. I mean, a couple of them were written in Russian, and one was translated and confiscated from Grenada when when we moved into Grenada under Reagan, some books were confiscated, and one was called Social Psychology and Propaganda, and it had a Moscow imprint on the front of it, but also an ISR imprint, which I didn't get it when I first looked at that. And then it bothered me all night long. I've seen that somewhere. Why does this bother me? And then I realized I was the Institute for Social Research, which is, of course, out of Berlin and Moscow. So I went running downstairs, and I found that 1976 book that I had actually studied very hard for my third book, the award winner, Cloning of the American Mind. And it was called Training for Change Agents. And it was a text for training change agents, provocateurs, agitators, to be in the classroom.
Wow.
And I, just to give you an idea, one of the subtitles in there is how to create a rumor. How to start a rumor. And then how to eradicate knowledge in a person. How to eradicate values in a person. How to extinguish loyalties. I mean, we can go on and on. And, of course, my first thought is, why would an educator in America need to know that? So that started me like a dog with a bone after that. And so I started digging very, very hard and started getting really specialized books, like books on cognitive dissonance, which most people would say, what, huh? But it turned out to all fall into a pattern, and I explained it in my Honing of the American Mind book, but I explained it better, actually, in the How to Counter Group Manipulation Tactics, because I realized even after Cloning of the American Mind came out, there were gobs of questions by, you know, just readers and fan mail and whatnot, that came in, we don't get it. Or they were trying to spread the word, and then they would say cognitive dissonance was a weight loss program or something. I was like, no, that's not what we're talking about here. I mean, yes, it may be a scam weight loss program, but that's not cognitive dissonance. So I had to go back and say, no, this is what it is. So I talk about in this book all the things that a professional agitator, provocateur, facilitator does, or change agent. Sometimes you can use that term, too, because that's more towards social values. And how they do it is with really professional agitation techniques. And these run the gamut from artificial disruption, which I would have to explain to you, you know, would we just start on that one, disorganization techniques, cognitive dissonance, negative and positive reinforcement, most people have heard that, involuntary attention, it sounds like English, but nobody quite gets that unless you explain it, self-disclosure techniques, encounter sessions, desensitization, I'm not saying that right, desensitization, and then superimposed value structures, psychological threshold structures, group dynamics, getting into the belief system, internalizing a new belief system, and behavioral reversion. That sounds very complicated, but that is what is in and explain very simple so that the average high school graduate can understand it. And that's basically what we're talking about. The movers and shakers know how to do this, and they'll do it in a way that you'll never get it unless you learn, A, the techniques themselves, and, B, the lead-in lines. The lead-in lines really are the dead giveaways, because they'll always, or usually anyway, say something right at the beginning to kind of get everybody on their side and everybody in their corner and sound like everybody's best friend. And when they do that, then you've got them, essentially. You've got them where you want them, because then you can start countering. And I'll just start from one of the sessions that I give and give you an example of how that happened to me and how I got everybody in a sexual harassment AIDS awareness workshop in the Department of Justice.
I love that story.
That people were colleagues, and I got them to walk out.
Yeah, that is a great story. You know, that's funny. I didn't think you'd tell that story because it's, you know, it's right there in the front of the book.
It really does. It's a good one. It says it all.
Well, okay, let's take a really quick break.
Okay.
And while, you know, just in case people thought, wow, a lot of that went over my head, think about it. Why do little kids turn their parents in to social services? You know, what goes on that gets a kid to do something like that?
That's right.
It's all this stuff. We'll be right back with you in 2 minutes here on We the People Radio. You're listening to the home of Free Fire Media.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces, smiling faces, sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces, tell lies, and I got proof.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Uncle Sam's got his hands in my pockets, and he helps himself each time he needs a dime. Them politicians treat me like a mushroom, 'cause they feed me bull and keep me in the blind.
Wow, I don't know what to say. Uncle Sam, come take my money and throw it in that big black hole.
They treat me like a mushroom. I like that. Okay, who is that, Bob?
That is Travis Tritt with Lord Have Mercy on the Working Man.
Nice.
And before that, we heard Smiling Faces sometimes from The Undisputed Truth. You were asking about that during the break.
Yeah, the one going out. That was a great song.
Yeah.
Yes, very creepy.
Yeah, very creepy.
They knew something back then, didn't they?
Beverly, your book's got a lot of theme music. Frighteningly enough. All right. So tell the story.
Okay. You want me to tell this one? I figured everybody wants to hear this. Okay. Back, I don't know, about 10 years ago, maybe less than that, I was working for the Justice Department, and they had a mandatory sexual harassment AIDS awareness workshop, and you had to select from one of 3 days and sign up and so on. So most of us did, and all of us that wanted to keep the job. And it was about political correctness, as expected, which didn't bother most of my colleagues, because after all, most of the bureaucracy today is very liberal. That's one of the stunts they have pulled on us behind our back. They're not elected, but every time a liberal Democrat gets into power, they open up the floodgates and get all kinds of liberals, of course, in as career bureaucrats. And then when the conservatives win control, they say, hey, we're going to put on a hiring freeze and slow down the growth of government, which is, yeah, that's right, but they aren't playing the game here, because what happens, the leftist bureaucrats keep on a-coming, and the conservatives and traditionalists and constitutionalists go bye-bye. So anyway, they didn't care if it was politically correct, and they figured they were paid to endorse the policies of whatever current administration was in, so it was a no-brainer to them. Now, the lady who served as the workshop moderator began by asking us, what pops into your heads as soon as I say AIDS, HIV, sexual orientation? Just write it down. Just write it down. Whatever comes into your head. Or call it out. Well, most of us, you know, just started doing what we thought the women wanted to hear. Homophobia, fear, intolerance, you know, that kind of thing. And So then she turned out the lights and she showed a short film featuring interviews with homosexuals and maybe others. Some of them may have been actors, actually. But anyway, they decried stereotyping and went on to express how incredible it was that something so normal as same-sex attraction could cause a person to be ostracized. My goodness. Afterward, the moderator worked without much success to generate discussion with us, because that means she's seeing how well she's relating to her group. But she couldn't get us to discuss AIDS or the virus that causes it and this and that. And she tried to say you couldn't get it from HIV from the fellow in the next cubicle or from someone to using the same restroom and so on and so forth, which was only minimally accurate, of course, because she, you know, went over the part about bodily fluids, such as splash-ups from drinking fountains and touching toothpaste tubes that have been contaminated, et cetera, et cetera. But what my colleagues and what neither my colleagues or the moderator herself knew was that there was someone in the room who understood these techniques and understood also that everybody was not getting the whole picture. So I was also understood that she was going to try to build a consensus, and that consensus was going to be, of course, very liberal. That, you know, homosexuality is fine, same-sex marriage is great, and et cetera. And you can't get AIDS from touching, you know, a cubicle or a doorknob or something. So it was a fucker's game. So after listening to the politically correct spiel for about half an hour, I raised my hand and I said, excuse me, I have a question. Now, this is music to this moderator's ears, because it meant, she thought, that she was starting to connect with these people, and that, you know, most of the guys were looking at their watches and wanted to get back to whatever they were doing in their cubicle. So my question was great. And she heard me out. And I said, I think all of us here know the risk of catching AIDS or HIV from a person in the next office or bathroom stall is minimal. That's not what concerns us. What many of us are concerned about is the compromised immune systems of those who indulge in risky sexual behavior, individuals who go on to get strains of pneumonia, tuberculosis, and other highly contagious diseases that are very resistant to antibiotics and other treatments. What materials have you brought us to address this issue? Well, the lady was beside herself. She never expected the question. She didn't have any literature. She didn't have any snappy response. So I yawned and I stretched and I said, well, if there's nothing in your repertoire that addresses concerns like ours, I think we're done here. And I got up and proceeded to walk out, whereupon everybody else in the room followed me.
Nice.
Now, this is how you co-opt phony consensus meetings and get others, including the weaker fence-sitters that have no idea what's going on here, to join you. So what did I actually do? Now, you have to think about this. Actually, I did several things. There were several levels of effort here, and it all appeared very smooth, because I'm pretty old hand at it at this point. First, I didn't give the moderator anything to arouse suspicion about me. Nothing that I said, nothing in my body language, no raised eyebrows, until she unintentionally provided an opening, which I figured she would sooner or later. So she had no means of shutting me out. Secondly, I didn't get distracted by her opening gambit to create an us mentality with her we're all in the same team questions. In fact, I turned the tactic back on her. I said, if you remember, what many of us are concerned about is, what have you brought us? Do you have anything to give us? So I turned the same tactic back on her.
So it became
you. I never referred to myself directly.
Right.
I kept saying many of us. We are concerned. And therefore, she couldn't ostracize me by using the rest of the group against me.
You used it against
and
her.
Finally, mm-hmm. I affected a calm, laid-back, non-confrontational, even a bored demeanor throughout the whole thing by stretching and yawning. That's the tactic. Those are the tactics that are grounded in the rules of psych war. And that's what you study in my course that usually takes about 5 hours that we're going to be trying to do in much less than that. But they're based on sound techniques that work every time if you are comfortable using them. And if you're not comfortable using them, and not everybody will be, by the way, I mean, all people, there are personalities cut out for doing what I do. And there are those that aren't real comfortable enough to be that fast on their feet. So if you're one of those people, what you do is you go in and support the person you have picked out that is fast on their feet and can do this and can actually have a good time with it. Because if you're not having a good time with it, you can't do it. But if you can support that person, which means you don't go in as a group and sit down as a group, because then, man, that gal will have you identified by body language in a New York minute. Mm-hmm. You go and sit in all different places in the room. And then when that person comes out with whatever he says or she says, then there can be another hand raised that says, hey, I agree with her. Or start getting up and walking out of the room, at which point, because of we're now in a mass mentality, nobody thinks for himself anyway, so everybody will get up and walk out.
And so it's really about a waiting game. It's about being patient. And I know we've gone from, just in groups around here, we've gone from kind of being patient and having too many people who didn't know what was going on, so the whole group kind of got bowled over, to mm-hmm. people being overly aggressive and springing on the attack right when they walked in the door.
Right. That often happens. But if you don't let that happen in the first place, and there's no clue. Now, that speaks also to the question that I asked first of all. So, try to find out who your moderator is going to be and who paid them. But do so in a very upbeat sort of way. I'm so excited about this coming meeting. That would be a big help, because if there is even a hint that, there's going to be trouble, then they're going to send in even bigger guns than they had planned on sending in. In fact, they're going to pack the audience. And you won't know some of the people. You'll think they're just from different departments or whatever, and you're not going to know that, you're already in a packed situation. So there's a lot to think about here, but it is doable. And if we really started doing it on a large-scale basis the way the left has. Now, let's face it, until the 1960s, the left did not have that kind of clout. I mean, they did not have a majority in any way, shape, or form. This has only been since the 70s and 80s that they've been able to slowly amass this cadre of well-trained people to keep doing this. And, of course, they're highly paid. We, the conservatives, traditionalists, constitutionalists, pay each other nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend not to get the pros, the level of professionals. And, I mean, then if that's natural, I mean, you, in a way you can argue, well, we shouldn't have to pay to defend our own country. But we do. And so for many reasons we've been taken advantage of, and now, yeah, we're behind the eight ball.
We're behind the eight ball, but, as people are waking up and as people are attending these things and they're realizing that these little innocuous meetings are not little innocuous meetings.
No, they are, and they're scared.
Yeah, and they
suddenly
and they start getting
panicked.
Some...
They realize that, hey, the election's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
The people that we would have put up there aren't there. A candidate is going to wind up there that is either too weak to handle it right now. I mean, there were eras when some of the candidates, if you take them at their word, might have been, it would have been okay to be sort of a milquetoast. I'm not saying any particular candidate here now. There are some that are in certain policies, like, say, foreign policy, but they're not on social issues, or they're a milquetoast on social issues and not in foreign policy. So there's some of that going on, too. But right now, we need somebody who is extremely forceful without appearing mean-spirited. And that's going to take some hunting around, and all we're looking at is the same old people that we've heard of or heard from for years and years and years, and guess what? That's not going to cut it. The left didn't do that. Obama came out of nowhere Clinton mm-hmm. came out of nowhere. I mean, yes, they were. Clinton was a governor before he hit the presidential circuit and so on. But usually you have steps to climb prior to Truman era. You had steps to climb, and you had to be more of a known entity and have a little bit of name recognition nationally, not just in your state, before you would even be considered for president.
Right, and now in the media technology, they can become an overnight success. All right, we better take a quick break.
Exactly.
We'll be up against the top of the hour here. You are listening to Beverly Ekman, author of How to Counter Group Manipulation Tactics. I hope you go to wethepeopleradio.us on the break and join the chat. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
America needs you, Harry Truman. Harry, could you please come home? Things are looking bad. I know you would be mad to see your favorite man developing the land you love.
Hey, so if you're just jumping on board, you're joining We the People Radio. Go to the chat room at wethepeopleradio.us. Follow along with us. We're with Beverly Ekman, and she is keeping us spellbound on this end of the microphone with stories of success in anti-Delphine at public meetings. That was a great story.
Yeah, how not to be manipulated. Because honestly, like I had somebody on the chat room who had written in and said, what do they do with all our input? You know, and obviously a rhetorical question. They throw it away till they can get us all to agree on nothing so that they can write the policy they were intending to write in the first place.
Right. Right. The whole thing is to create a phony consensus. And I spend a lot of time right in the beginning of this book and also Walking Targets, that's another book I've written, on phony consensus building, on consensus building in general. And you have to be aware that when you have certain types of meetings, public meetings, and that includes school meetings, in state law, you have to have, or federal law if it's a school, I mean, because they're all really basically, even though it's State Department of Education, it's all tied into the money of the federal U.S. Department of Education. So they have to have at least the appearance of input from the public, or public support, as they put it. And if you don't have at least the appearance of that, then it's a no-go as far as the law is concerned. So they have to make an attempt to get a consensus, an agreement from many diverse factions, which are expected, of course, to be in any place or any meeting that you attend. But unfortunately, this reverse way of doing it it's phony. And today, be it a workplace, a community forum, or whatever, a PTA, team spirit is valued above all else. It's valued above individual conscience. That's the creating of a psychological environment that they've been doing since the 60s. Everything is team spirit. And if you're out outside of team spirit, which, by the way, was a Marxist expression long before it became popular over here. Here we call it just, you know, being accommodating or that kind of a thing. But team spirit is valued above individual conscience. They don't want individual thinkers. They want everybody to, if not think alike, then go along to get along. And, you know, kids are taught that in school. To be popular, you wear this, that, and the other. To be popular, you say these kinds of expressions or those kinds of expressions. You use them. To be popular, you listen to certain music or you don't. So we're all conditioned to be popular until the whole election process is more like a student council election than a national election for president. But anyway, this team spirit thing comes back to bite you, because nobody is supposed to cry foul or rock the boat. The validity of anybody's complaint or concern is of no account if it flies in the face of team spirit. You're just called a troublemaker or uncooperative. And nobody wants to be uncooperative. You don't want to be the person who don't get no respect. So nobody wants to be, as Nichols would have put it, you don't want to be the person without respect. So in order to fit in and not be, you might say, targeted by this manipulator, this facilitator, and have none of your questions, in other words, every time you raise your hand, she doesn't call on you. Or every time your group tries to insert just, you know, a comment or some other thing, even if you do it quietly and nicely, you're ignored. And pretty soon, because of this, and the body language that the moderator uses in ignoring you, and she does use body language, she kind of casts a jaundiced eye toward you and your group. And in the end, this is what happens. Everyone else, in order to save themselves, rejects you too. Even if they never saw you before. Even if they never saw your group before. They will start distancing themselves from you. And that's called the us against them. So if you're on the us team, which is going to be the politically correct and paid attention to team, then you are going to follow the moderator or facilitator or whatever she wants to call herself. You're going to follow this professional's lead. And if you're on the opposite side of the fence, pretty soon here's what's going to happen. You're going to get mad. And the minute you do that, you're going to raise your voice. And the minute you do that, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
You might as well just disappear into the woodwork, because you're not going to get anywhere. So you have to stay cool as a cucumber, and so does your group, in order to shut the process down. That is your aim, to shut the consensus process down. I mean, there's a time for consensus. I'm not saying that it is never, ever warranted, but it has to be in a situation where everybody is fairly good-hearted and really wants the same, the best for everybody. In these situations, that is not the case. That is not the case. You're in a different kind of situation where there is a preconceived agenda, and that is not honest. Usually there is what they call strength in numbers, but again, that's not true in the case of a professional moderator. They would much rather, because that's simple to do, than they would a whole lot of people. Because if they have to moderate, if they have to target half the group in the place, they're going to find that a tough sell, or a tougher sell. They have to be very, very good to do it, and some are very, very good. But if they're just so-so, they're going to start for the first one. So here's what they're going to do. When they ask you, okay, that first question, what's the first word that pops into your head when I say whatever it is that they're going to be talking about? Then you're going to be making a list. You're going to have paper and pen in front of you. Believe me, they will put a paper and pen in front of you if you don't have one. And You're going to be writing things down so that you remember them. And while you're doing that, guess what you're not doing? Thinking. You are not thinking while you are writing. You are half listening to what she's saying, too. So you're just getting keywords. You're not really getting the full effect of some of her other lead-in lines that I'll, you know, get to in a moment. There are several lead-in lines.
Like, all right, Beverly, hang on one second. Further. We've got to take a news break here. The news is going to cut us off. But you know what? This is a super important thing. I hope people hang with us through the second hour. You are listening to Beverly Ekman, author of How to Counter Group Manipulation Tactics, here on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Oops, I think I lost my cue there. It's hour two. Aaron and I were
running out of music.
Aaron and I were sending little signals to each other, and Bob's staring at me really hard. Elizabeth, come back in. Come back in.
Who's willing your lips to move?
Yeah. Welcome back to We the People
Radio.
That's
why we keep him on the other side of the table.
Hey, so if you're just joining in, we are talking to Beverly Ekman. It's a great show today. We are kind of digging in and analyzing the methodology and the manipulation behind public meetings. And public meetings are specifically designed to build consensus for a predetermined conclusion so that specific agencies and groups can go back and accomplish their goals by checking this off their checklist. And they've been doing it for years and years and years. They're very skilled. They're trained. And we just figured it out. So Beverly
is
fast-forwarding.
We're going to force Beverly to come back on and talk to us about schools, because that's a whole different
ballgame.
And we totally need to do a program on schools, because that, I mean, as I was reading your information on how this works in the school system, that's why kids do things that I was reading that one example. Just to kind of let people know, you see that Beverly's going to be on the program, you better get your friends on there. Because she was talking about how a kid has a conversation with a guidance counselor, and it's about something, you know, creepy like sex ed or whatever. And the guidance counselor uses words to let the kid know that, well, their parents might not be super informed.
Yeah.
I remember being told that in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
that my parents didn't understand, and that, you know, it was okay to use birth control, and it was okay for all this. And it's like, you know, I'm a kid that just came out of Catholic school, going to school in Connecticut, and, you know, we're like, birth what?
Yeah.
We had no clue. And I'm glad we had no clue. But I do remember those tactics. I do remember even, you said church before, and I was bad. I actually got sent home from a church retreat because they wanted to sit around and talk about, you know, how much our parents didn't understand us. And I was like, all right, revolution. So they sent me home.
I think one you're referring to is Bushwhacking Johnny.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the one. And boy, have I ever gotten a lot of feedback on that through the years from some kids whose parents, I guess, passed it along to them and said, have you ever heard anything like that? And they said, yes. And then they said, I think we need to have a little talk.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's a whole big thing. So there's the promo for the next show we're doing with Beverly.
Yes.
That's like obligating her on the air.
Hey, so Beverly, we were talking about these public meetings, and you were talking about lead-in lines, and Aaron and I and several others have been to a number of meetings, and they're all the same, but a little bit different. And some of them, the way that they set up the room has a lot to do with how they're going to manipulate you. And my question to you is, at what point do you recognize that this is your opportunity to turn the tables on the meeting? Because there are those meetings where they try really hard not to allow you to ask questions, and then they really want to break you off into individual groups, and if at all possible, take you into different rooms.
Yeah.
So clearly,
your key. You're right there. That you're not allowed to say anything for quite some time, as in that film, that the short film that moderator or whatever she called herself showed us in that sexual harassment AIDS awareness thing. And so nobody was saying anything during that. And then they tried to say something else that would bring us out, but she never got around to the breaking us into groups because I never let her.
So you
she
have
never
to,
got the chance.
So you do really, you do have to be on your game. You've got to be thinking and looking for the opportunity, kind of quick on your feet, because to be able to slip in there, because we've tried it, and we definitely
it takes
meet with
a lot of practice.
Yeah.
In fact, you really need to, I hate to say role play these things, but you know what you're doing. You're not doing it in a deceitful way. You know exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to learn how to handle certain hostile situations. And if you can't handle the hostile situation, even in your own group, with somebody playing the bad guy, the devil's advocate, so to speak, and then somebody playing the other side, you're going to need a lot more practice. But there's going to be some people that are going to be leaders in this thing. But the first thing you really need to do is recognize when you're going to be bringing everybody to a consensus. And you have to understand first what a consensus is. The dictionary definition of consensus is group solidarity in sentiment and belief, or just general agreement. Unanimity, on the other hand, is defined as collective opinion. So what they really want is not a consensus, but unanimity on this thing. They want uniform thinking. That's why I wrote this book, Cloning of the American Mind. It was centered on education, but the word cloning of the American mind was deliberate because everyone thinks alike. And you start with this education, you start with school children so that they're primed and ready by the time they reach adulthood to have this kind of a mindset of uniform thinking is good, individual thinking is bad. So, all consensus building is built on the principle first articulated by a guy in Germany, Hegel, around 1800. He discovered that you can take one firm point of view and then its opposite. Combine them and come up with a brand new viewpoint, which is a synthesis of the two, combination of the two. This new viewpoint will be the one that all parties are supposed to accept or will be tricked into accepting. And the provocateur or agitator is going to call it a consensus. But the consensus she's talking about is essentially a collective opinion that doesn't reflect anyone's opinion. So think about that. A consensus in the term, we're saying it here, in the deceptive term, the deceptive way, is a collective opinion that doesn't reflect anybody's opinion. When the collective good is viewed as superior to and more important than the individual group, which is essentially a socialist view, then the consensus no longer falls into the category of a compromise. Consensus in this way is a stronger term because the pro and the con viewpoints in the collectivist mindset, the socialist mindset, no longer exist anymore. The rightness or wrongness of the original viewpoints is not even the issue. The point is to produce a new ideal, opinion, or value that will be universally accepted and supported, or at least will appear to be supported by everyone in the room, and that's when they've got you, because they can take that, to their employers, it's usually in government, and preserve the illusion that they tried to get community input, and this is what everybody believes, that there was participation in the policy-related decision-making, when in fact there wasn't.
Right, because everyone was stuck in their chair.
This is what the people want.
Well, we've got like 2 minutes before our break. Can you rattle off some lead-in lines, or I don't know if they're just like buzzwords, things that ought to trigger people to go, oh,
red flags?
Ah, yeah, there are a lot of those.
Well, the word consensus is the one that springs to my mind because they do use that.
Mm-hmm. What was that?
The word consensus.
Yeah, the word consensus right there is, you know, you shouldn't even use it. Another one is change agent. Agent for change. And, you know, even though some good-hearted clergymen even use it, and they mean for the good of, greater good of God and this kind of a thing, but I have gone up to countless of them and saying, if you use this term, there are going to be some that are going to find you, they're going to turn their backs because this has a different, it has a double meaning. So if they say they're an agent of social change and say it like that, then that's not good. A community organizer, that's another one. Don't assume you're oversensitive or paranoid or reactionary or narrow. You know, that kind of thing, if you hear that kind of thing being flung your way by the moderator or facilitator, then you know you are under attack. And don't raise your voice. You know, don't try to let them get under your skin and start raising your voice, because the minute you do, then they've got your number. You know, you don't do that. The other thing is, if they try to, now this is more for young people and older people, but they try to build your ego up by telling you, in effect, that you're more immature than you really are, or that kind of thing. You know, you're a big boy now, you know. Or it's not surprising that your parents wouldn't be tolerant, that kind of thing. That should send up a huge red flag right there. So that kind of thing is kind of a standalone. But there's other, when they divide you into groups, the facilitator may say, okay, we're going to do some brainstorming now. Uh-oh. You know, that one should be kind of a red flag for you. But there are many red flag terms, and there's so many, I don't even know where I'd start. But most of them are in one of my books, probably this one on how to counter group manipulation tactics, but there's other books that have it in there too. But if you're called a name like right-wing fundamentalist or something like that, then you know right there that you're being targeted, and that's a personal sort of vendetta type thing right against you. But even if your whole group is, you know, they have questions like, do you support requiring parental permission for academic surveys? Now, that right there, okay, especially if they use the negative interrogative, don't you support this or that? Don't you support abortion? Okay. If you say it that way, then the reasonable expectation is, well, I ought to support it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you support free speech? Well, of course I do.
Don't you think we should take a break?
So every time you hear, don't you think, or
our
don't
engineer,
you support?
Our engineer is manipulating us. He just said, don't you think we should take a break? Bob, we are your servants. We will do it. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Here with Beverly Eckman.
You're on the ball.
He's a good little student, isn't he? Here at
I learned fast.
We're at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Just like yesterday.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
You really had me going, stringing me along. You really had me going, baby. Now I'm gone. I never saw it coming, that you could do.
So if you think that you are a good little German, you have been Delphied.
If that was on, it doesn't make you laugh, you've been Delphied. That's a good one, Bob. All right, who was that?
Yet again.
That was some classic country from Holly Dunn.
Yeah, I've heard that one before, but you know your songs take on a whole new meaning.
Yeah, because they yeah.
Well, you know, you listen and you sing along and you don't think about the words, especially songs from the 60s and 70s. You look back and you think, oh my God, they knew something.
They were totally programming us.
Yeah,
and now we're playing them on our show. Okay, so let's see. You're listening.
So
to...
we were talking about the lead-in lines and you know, Fred Flagg.
Yeah.
Well, another one that you know if you heard this, a person who really wanted to improve whatever it is, or who really wanted to, and just, you know, fill in the blank. Every time you hear that, a person who really wanted to, if it's in a moderator-type setting, then you know that person's really a facilitator. Because if she's looking at you or certain people in the group and saying, a person who really wanted to, blah, 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 that implies, oh, you don't want to at all. And or everyone on the committee understands why you are opposed to climate change or whatever it is. I don't care. Everybody on the committee understands why. So that means you're a nutbag. You know? And so she's trying to paint you as a nutbag right off the bat, he or she. So and even a child would see that. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, whatever it is. Well, then she's called you childlike, and by extension, she's gotten everybody in the group to think of you as childlike and a nutcase, too.
So, Beverly,
that's the kind of things that you okay. have to look at.
So what about when they break you up into groups?
Yeah, what's the technique to get?
And how do you keep that from happening? Because that's been one of our challenges.
How do you keep them from breaking you into groups in the first place?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
why do they do it?
It kind of depends. It's very you have to have been at this so long that you kind of recognize when she or he or she, the change agent, is going to go into that. And it's probably going to come after a long period of quiet and a little bit of hand-raising here and there so that she can get a fix on members of the group. And don't think she doesn't. She's looking, he or she is looking for every raised eyebrow. She's looking for a person that's sitting with crossed arms because that more or less indicates hostility. Not maybe real blatant hostility, but somebody who's saying to themselves, you know what, I'm not taking all this you know what in. I'm not sure I'm really buying into this. So she is identifying with every person that is like that. So that is the time right there that you have to be thinking, that she's thinking about breaking you into groups. And then what she's going to do is she's going to do it in such a way that there winds up being like people, like-minded people in each group. And when you all come back together, she's going to pick the one that will go for whatever she's selling, whatever the preconceived agenda is, and the ones that are against it, she's going to ostracize them. And so she's going to have the group do all that dirty work for her. She's not going to right away, say, you're ostracized. She's not going to do something that blatant. But she's going to get the rest of the group to just figure, hey, those people are on the wrong side of the fence and we've got to shut them down. And then there's five basic steps to indoctrination. If you recognize those, that is always help too, because they're going to try to take your belief system, your source of, I guess you'd say, emotional support, and pull it out from under you by making statements that you'll probably react to, if not with your voice, then with your body language. And so these, I list them in that book, the five steps to indoctrination. So if you see any one of those coming down the pike, then you know that you're going to get put into groups probably in the next few minutes.
And then do you advocate that people stand up and refuse to go in the groups? Or
I would say something like, well, why don't we just randomly choose our groups ourselves? I have a question. That's the best one. I have a question. What would you say to the idea of us just randomly picking our own groups? And if she doesn't like that idea, then you know, and the others will know by inference, that something's up. And they shall probably be on your side, because if she says, I don't like that idea at all, or I think I'd rather do the choosing, then she has already kind of identified herself, and by doing so, she's already built a wall between the people she was trying to impress and herself, and she's not going to get the respect that she would have had had she not said that. I would do that. And keeping a cool head, don't take the bait. Boy, that's the biggest one. Just don't take bait. You're going to get thrown emotionally charged comments that sound like something you would buy into. Like, well, let's just don't have kids graduate at all until they learn to read. Let's don't have them graduate the third grade unless they can read an entire paragraph completely. And of course, most people will say, yeah, I agree with that. Hey, she's got you. You don't respond. You just sit there. Let her think whatever she wants.
So do we, I realize every situation is different, but in general, is it better? Up here, we live in a really conservative area, so I realize there are people listening from all over the place. But in an area where probably 80 to 85% of the people have a pretty good idea of what's going on with this stuff, if there's a predetermined decision to not split into groups and just not get out of our chairs...
That's always good. If enough people do it, you can probably pull that off. But if you're going to have... If you think you might be facing a stacked audience where a lot of the group, maybe you won't even know some of them, that might be a cue too. If it's a smaller town where everybody in the meeting probably knows one another, or most people do, then you can probably pick out the ones that don't seem to belong there. I've done that with churches. I know some of these people were not members of our congregation, even though it's a huge congregation. I've never seen them before, and they're arguing, for same-sex marriage or whatever, that the most of the group would have rejected. Or maybe it's something else, the resurrection of Christ or something like that. I mean, it could be anything. And I think to myself, why are these people here? They know they would be comfortable in a church like ours. Why are they here? So that's something you always ask yourself. You have to look around. In other words, don't just react to what the provocateur agitator says. Start looking around and seeing how other people are reacting to what they say. Then ask yourself, have I ever seen this person before? And maybe on the break, if there is a break, look up to that person and say, hi, I don't remember you. My name is, and where are you from?
That's one of the things that we've learned is that you get to know the folks in the room, and actually you're just a visionary because we do have to take a break. When we return, there was a part in your book that I think most people would not figure out on their own. I as I read that, I thought, hey, I didn't think about that. But okay. The idea of fundamentalism. It's actually page 57 in your group manipulation tactics book, on that right hand side, talking about fundamentalists. And that is
very. And you want me to discuss that word?
Yeah, and you know the idea that that is a smear, because most people, if they were called a fundamentalist Christian, would not think that's a smear. So when we come back, you'll find out why it's a smear and how it's being used against you.
Okay.
All right.
After the break.
Absolutely. We're coming back with Beverly Ekman. She is amazing. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM, where things are also amazing, the home of Free Fire Media.
Have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460 530-605-4567.
You know what I'm saying? Still we keep on playing head games. That's all I get from you, head games. And I can't take it anymore, head games. Don't want to play no head games.
Okay, last half an hour of We the People Radio and how not to be a sheeple.
I like that, Head Games. That was a very popular song in the 60s.
And Bob, that was
Foreigner. It was Foreigner from the 70s,
Yeah, Foreigner from the 70s. See, I can do those. I don't know the other ones. But, we listened to that a lot when we were in junior high and high school, and I bet those people in our classrooms were just laughing up their sleeves.
Oh, I'm sure they were.
They probably wrote the song. They were like, hey, this is our theme song.
And have you ever thought about it? And I know we're going to talk to Beverly next week.
About what goes on in school with music.
But don't you remember, about it, not to get off track of the fundamentalist Christian thing, but remember being in school and always being lined up in order.
Oh.
Always.
You know, when I used to substitute, I used to force the kids not to line up. It was really hard for them. They're like, but our teacher makes us line up. It's like, well, I'm not your teacher, and I don't want you to line up. I don't think it's good for you. I was not very popular with the adults, but the kids thought I was a lot of fun.
That's what I'm talking about. Have fun with this.
Exactly.
And probably wonder, whatever happened to Mrs. Ryan?
What happened to Miss Ryan? She was so much fun. It's like, yeah, you go, kids. So you
stopped getting sub calls for some reason.
No, I started getting a lot of sub calls, actually, because you know what? There were no problems when I was a sub. You know, we had fun and we learned stuff, but you know what? We didn't feel the need to follow all the rules. I mean, it's not good for you.
Gives you constipation.
Exactly. It does something bad. So we talked to Beverly on the break, and honestly, the crossover with schools and all the information there is just immense. So we will be doing that next week. So for all those of you that are going, wait, we're running out of time. We're not. The beginning of next week's show, we're talking to the NFIB for about 20 minutes or so on some legislation here in California. And then Beverly will be coming back on with us, and we'll be finishing this dialogue on school. So, okay, now that we've been totally derailed here, talk to us about this fundamentalist thing, because I thought that was just something that really most of us don't even know.
Well, the term fundamentalist in this country really wasn't part of the lexicon at all. I mean, it wasn't part of people's vocabulary until the Iranians made it part of our vocabulary, because they were called, some of the Muslim sects there were called fundamentalists because they were, they took their Muslim faith to new levels that were not thought about at the time, and unfortunately it was a very violent part of the sex religion. So the term fundamentalism became a slogan, if you will, at that time. And the left here picked it up and thought, hey, that's a good idea. So let's call Christians a right-wing fundamentalist cult. And that's how that got started. What you've got here technically is called a meme, but I'm not going to go into that right now. But what is, okay, fundamentalism in this context, it started being exported all over the world then, beginning in the 80s. But provocateurs were able to coin the terms fundamentalist Christians and religious right-wingers because of what happened in Iran at that time. Now, you think about it for a second. Why didn't they call us Orthodox Christians? Because even though there's a Greek Orthodox Church, you don't usually hear Christian Orthodoxy, Christian Orthodox Church. You don't ever hear it. You hear Jewish Orthodox, Orthodox Judaism. You hear that. You hear fundamentalist Judaism, but not much. Usually Orthodox Judaism. So that's okay because of the Holocaust. Nobody's going to go against what they call Orthodox Judaism. So that's an okay term. So why don't they call us, instead of the negative, what has become a negative term, fundamentalist, because of the Iranians and what went on there before, around the 80s, and then, of course, on into the present day with the terrorism and 9/11 and everything. Why did they call us fundamentalist Christians? And then we went and not getting it. We tag the same things on ourselves. You'll see ads. We are a fundamentalist Bible-believing church.
Yeah.
Help! You know, you should not have picked up the term fundamentalist. Bible-believing, fine. But we off the fundamentalist. I mean, you might as well say, hey, I'm a right-winger nutbag. I mean, you might as well hang a sign around your neck because that's going to antagonize people. They aren't even going to know why they're antagonized. They're just going to know that, hey, that's has somehow negative thoughts for me, negative ideas and connotations for me. So it's an insult. If they try to say, you're a fundamentalist Christian, and say, we all know what fundamentalists believe, or something like that. You say, oh, I thought I was an Orthodox Christian. And they'll have nothing to say.
See?
I mean, they simply won't be expecting it, so that is a definite way you get around it. Now, notice what I didn't do. I didn't say, I am not a fundamentalist Christian. Oh, no. The minute you start getting defensive and saying, I am not, you're dead. The game's over. So you just say, oh, I thought I was an Orthodox Christian. You must have meant Orthodox Christian. Didn't you? Now you see how I turned it back on him?
Uh-huh.
Didn't you?
Didn't you?
I used that one little phrase, didn't you? Oh, well, the natural thing to say back is, well, of course I meant that. And everyone, not knowing what in the world you're doing, that's in the room, is going to go along with that. They're going to see it through your eyes. It's going to become transparent. It's cool. When you start doing this, you wouldn't believe the calls I get from people who say, you know, I've used your techniques and everything. Guess what? We won.
Nice.
And it's so neat. Or I hear from somebody that says, you know what? I came in, I read your book the week after such and such happened. I did not realize why I, you know, got hung out to dry in the first hour of this meeting. But then they went back again and did better. So it does work. But this isn't... This use of name-calling, fundamentalist in this case, is an implied smear. It's not a direct smear, it's implied. So you can just throw it right back and say, oh, you must have meant Orthodox Christian, didn't you?
See, and my point, I completely burned up my highlighter in that part of the book because I thought, you know what, most people, honestly, would not when I read that, that's a smear, I was like, oh, that's a smear? I was like, holy crap, that's a smear. I didn't even think of it as a smear. Bob, can we say crap?
Even though the Iranian thing and the Muslim extremist faction that did all this stuff is called fundamentalist, we still... Somehow Christians, I think it's because Christians basically are good-hearted and think the best of people. The level of deception that the left uses is so alien to the Christian mindset, and let's face it, most people that live, this is the major religion here. It still is. The majority religion here is Christian, of whatever denomination you want to call it. But that is the majority religion, which is why it's targeted so much. Much more than Judaism. They don't like any religion. They don't care what it is. But they don't like any religion. The left doesn't like religion, period. It's the opium of the masses, right? That's what Stalin said. All right. So, or maybe it was Lenin. That's right. Marx.
Somebody bad.
So, opium of the masses. But, whatever. If that's what they believe, they don't like any religion. But Christianity is targeted because it's the major majority, if you count heads, religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to get the ideals and values that support Christianity out of the way first.
This is Don?
That's a big deal with them. And so to call them fundamentalists, that carries negative connotations for reasons most people don't even remember at this point, because they don't remember the Iran of 1980. They remember something about, they kidnapped a bunch of people and held them for 400 and some days.
Okay,
but beyond that, it's getting fuzzy. And I don't remember that's when fundamentalism started being applied over here to Christians.
No, because I was always thinking that meant, I don't know, I guess I
Bible
thought that
believing.
Meant they were, yeah, that they were
it
like
meant Bible believing.
Hardcore,
meant,
literal
hey,
Bible
we
believer.
We're Orthodox. We take it seriously.
Yeah,
that's what you thought it meant.
That's...
And so did everybody else, but the left said, ha-ha, this slogan can be used.
Wow.
They don't see anything except through the prism of how can it help me.
Well, they're really good at twisting things.
Oh, yeah. But mainly at twisting it and how does it help me? If it doesn't help them, they're not interested.
So if you were going to retool people's, I'm not going to say retool their lexicon because that's too hard, but if you were going to retool the way people respond to the left.
To perceive, yeah.
What would be some, like, don't you? You know, that re-asking as a question and don't you, which seeks agreement.
Well, somebody's going to question you. I mean, when the thing is over, some Christian is going to say, what made you say that? What made you say Orthodox Christian? Tell them. Just be honest. Just tell them. Hey, fundamentalist Christian was not applied here until about 1980, after the Iranian mess, where these people were kidnapped and held for all that time. And then we said, hey, this sect is violent, and this is the fundamentalist group or division or whatever you want to call it, whatever they called it, of Muslim, and we're going to see it rise. Okay, so then fundamentalist Muslim sect became a term. But when they heard it applied to Christians, they didn't get it. Probably, again, because they're good-hearted and they don't think the worst of you. They don't think the way the left has been trained to think for years. And, you know, they keep turning more people out that are well-trained in schools of journalism, even in some theological seminaries, and mostly in universities and teachers. I mean, they just keep turning these guys out. More and more people who are real pros at this stuff.
Wow.
They don't want us to see an America that is has the liberties the Constitution guarantees. They want to see. They think that's dead. They think that's old hat. And if you go back and read some of these, the cocktail set, as somebody called it, of the 1980s, even under Reagan, they said. Many of that cocktail set, the high-flying jet-setters, said, well, you know, capitalism is really dead, and they meant capitalism as a pejorative, not as a free market enterprise. And they started using free market socialism as a term. That's when that term came into being. Most people have never heard it, but I sure have heard it. I live here in Washington, D.C. Believe me, I've heard it. So it was free market socialism that was on the lips of the high-flying conservative, even, jet set and cocktail set. And they thought that that was the wave of the future because they thought that free market politics could not survive in the 21st century, and that it was bound to fizzle out because nobody would be able to afford anything. Well, they weren't able to afford anything because of all the new regulations that stopped them from being able to afford anything. The regulatory stuff is what killed us.
Exactly, and we...
Of course, that's the way the socialists always work, so there's no surprises there.
Well, and we learned early in your discussion today that, you know, the left does appoint tons of bureaucrats. They always grow the agencies,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to come back and discuss that in 5 seconds, or Bob's going to ask us, don't we want to take a break, don't we?
Free market capitalism requires that we take a break here.
Yeah, free market capitalism requires we take a break. To thank the free market capitalists who support the programming on this fabulous station, KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Out of the ballpark, Bob.
Billy Joel.
Yep.
Now you're going to come up with a whole new set of music for next week, Bob. We expect
kids
to be wowed again.
And we will. He never lets us down. So last 10 minutes of We the People Radio with Beverly Ekman. And by the way, she will be returning next week because this woman's resume and depth of knowledge will require a solid month.
Yeah, we're going to have to. She's going to be our hostage. She lives across the country, but we're not going to let that stop
us. So next week we're talking about school kids and what they're doing.
Yeah, NFIB is going to come on at the very beginning, so don't be thrown if you tune in. And it's a man talking. Beverly had shoulder surgery, that's all. she'll be on right after that. And we have a caller on the line. We have Dawn on the line. Dawn?
Good morning.
Greetings.
Hi. A little off topic, but...
What?
I happen to be Jewish, and when people say they're going to Jew me down, I say, let me Christian you down.
Well, that works.
That works. And yes, you can say crap on air, but poo-poo caca is better.
As usual,
a very interesting show and guest. Thank you.
Well, Dawn, your program starts at 10, so you must be winging your way in here.
I am certainly doing that.
If you've ever heard Don's show, you know he's not Orthodox.
Exactly. Well, I guess we get to hang out a little bit and talk on Don's show, so we'll make sure and get some poo-poo caca in there for you, Don.
Thank you very much.
Sure, just let everybody know about my website.
Oh, yeah.
Because some people are going to be trying to find my stuff. And actually, if you just type my name on Google or wherever, or any search engine, I'll come up all over the place. But
that's how I found you.
BeverlyE.com. It's very easy to get to. It's Beverly with an extra E on it. And there's several tabs there. And just about anything you need to know, or, you know, I have a list of my books, book reviews, press room, appearances, links of interest to some of the articles that I've written that are already up online, stuff like that.
Hey,
or if you want to contact me, there's a little button for that. So So just, you know, go on my website, beverlyee.com, and you can find out what you need to know, and contact me if you need to. And most of my books are available multiple places, so, you know, that's not difficult to find.
Hey, and we were noticing that you've been on, like, 600 radio shows, talk shows.
Yeah, that's
something
over
like
time,
that.
Of course, but it's more like 750 now.
Wow.
Yeah.
751
yeah,
next
after
week.
After Walking Targets and How to Counter Manipulation Tactics came out, well, there was a first version, and then I had to update How to Counter Manipulation Group Manipulation Tactics because I wanted to branch out from education and kids to things like Agenda 21, which some people don't know about and some people do, to, you know, phony science and to other issues, energy, you know, there's a bunch of things that were being, healthcare, there's so many things that were being manipulated on that it's becoming really almost overwhelming. And now my publisher wants a new book. And so you're the first to know, the first ones that I've told publicly.
Cool.
It's called Agenda Games.
Good. Hey, and Beverly, would you say that the general public in the last two or three years is finally starting to catch on?
Yeah, that's basically why I'm writing Agenda Games, because they wanted something above and beyond How to Counter Group Manipulation Tactics. And I thought, oh my goodness, with this arm, I can't do anything. And then I started realizing, well, yeah, I guess I can do something here. And so it's in the works now. It's not ready yet. But people are starting to catch on, but they're not only starting to catch on, they're scared. And this is the first time I've really seen the population and gotten the kind of calls and emails that reflect actual fear that they've waited too long.
And I guess that's why this this book, honestly, for people that are unclear about this, but at beverlyee.com you can get all the information. But I literally did a search for Delphi technique in public meetings, and your stuff came up all over the place.
Is that right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's how I found you. And I thought, you know, honestly, we have, most of us have been conditioned to either be too nice to be disruptive in a public meeting, which would be, you know, most people would think it would be disruptive just to take the agenda in a slightly different direction or to
right.
not that,
well,
let,
a,
let them fully have their say.
And a way to be disruptive.
Right.
As I pointed out, you know, if you're, I know one woman, and she's a fellow author, so I'm not going to say her name. She's good. Believe me, she's good. She's on target. But when she gets on a talk show, you know, with hostiles, I'm talking about a regular talk show, not an interview just with her, but like a firing line type of situation where a lot of people are there. Her voice rises three octaves.
Mm-hmm.
And she's shrill, and because of that alone, people stop listening to her.
I can think of several people who fit that description who are very well-known talk show hosts and authors and things, and yet
yep.
they
yep.
don't,
and
they can't.
And that includes, you know, it isn't just women,
yeah.
it's men, too.
They can't take a
I'm
breath.
I'm not going to point any fingers here, either, although I could name one very famous one, and that is one reason he's targeted all the time, because he comes out, yes, he's got a very unique voice. Well, everybody's voice is unique, some more than, more unique than others, okay? I mean, usually that's good, because that's what makes a good singer. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if I put Barbara Streisand on the radio, you're not going to have to ask me if it's Barbara Streisand. You're already going to know. And it's not because you know the words to the song or maybe even heard the song before. You're going to recognize the voice. A voice that's unique is gold. I mean, that's gold. But in certain situations, like conservative talk show hosts, it's not gold.
Yeah. And
it targets you with the leftist media because they predominate,
mm-hmm.
not conservatives.
Well, and
so you have to learn to a balance unique, but in a Paul Harvey soft-spoken way.
Sure.
Paul Harvey's unique.
Well, yeah,
he
because
does not aggravate.
Yeah,
or
because,
he was. He's
because
dead now, but
you speak quietly, people hang on to every word because they don't want to miss it.
Yeah. And that's how actually Walter Cronkite, I mean, on the other side of the, he's just left, definitely on the liberal left side. But his voice is unique. You would notice him, whether, no matter, I mean, he could repeat a nursery rhyme and you'd still know it was him. But it's gold because he isn't targeted the way some leftists are. And some people on the right are very unique, but they're too unique, and they're too bombastic. That's what the word I'm trying to find.
No, I couldn't agree with you more there.
You can't be that way. You could under ordinary circumstances, but these are not ordinary circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we need them to change their game.
We also don't... I mean, we can't change the dialogue if we can't reach more people. And if we just go in as the, oh, no, they're there again, that doesn't bring new people onto the team, and it doesn't enlighten anybody.
Nope.
We're going to get a lot more information from you next week. We've got to get out of here because Dawn's show is going to start.
Thank you, Beverly. We'll talk
to you
next
week. Thank you, Beverly Ekman, BeverlyE.com.
Okay, well, it's my pleasure.
See you guys later next week.
And the Tea Party meeting tomorrow night.
That too.
6 o'clock.
That too. Come on, say something else so I can say that too again.
Are you?
I'm out of things to say. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.